Medal of Honor by Mac Reynolds, Part 3. Afterwards, alone in New Washington, and wanting to remain alone, Don Mathers strolled the streets for a time, bothered only occasionally when someone recognized his face and people would stop and applaud. He grinned inwardly. He had a suspicion already that after a time he'd get used to it and weary to death of it, but right now it was still new and fun. Who was the flyer way back in history, the one who first flew the Atlantic in a propeller-driven aircraft? His popularity must have been something like this. He went into O'Donnell's at lunchtime, and as he entered, the orchestra broke off the popular tune they were playing and struck up the interplanetary anthem. The manager himself escorted him to his table and made suggestions as to the specialties and the wine. When he first sat down, the other occupants of the restaurant, men and women, had stood and faced him and applauded. Don flushed. There could be too much of a good thing. After the meal, a fantastic production, Don finished his cigar and asked the head waiter for his bill, reaching for his wallet. The other smiled. "Captain, I'm afraid your money is of no value in O'Donnell's, not just for this luncheon, but whenever you honor us." The head waiter paused and added, "In fact, Captain, I doubt if there is a restaurant in the solar system where your money holds value, or that there will ever be." Don Mathers was taken aback. He was only beginning to realize the ramifications of his holding the Galactic Medal of Honor. At Space Command Headquarters, 3rd Division, Don came to attention before the Commodore's desk and tossed the other a salute. The Commodore returned it snappily and leaned back in his chair. "Take a seat, Captain. Nice to see you again," he added pleasantly. "Where in the world have you been?" Don Mathers slumped into a chair, said wearily, "On a bust. The bust to end all busts." The Commodore chuckled. "Don't blame you," he said. "It was quite a bust," Don said. "Well," the Commodore chuckled again, "I don't suppose we can throw you in the guardhouse for being AWOL, not in view of your recent decoration." There was nothing to say to that. "By the way," the Commodore said, "I haven't had the opportunity to congratulate you on your Kraden. That was quite a feat, Captain." "Thank you, sir," Don added modestly. "Rather foolish of me, I suppose." "Very much so. On such foolishness are heroic deeds based, Captain." The Commodore looked at him questioningly. "You must have had incredible luck. The only way we've been able to figure it was that his detectors were on the blink. That may be what happened." "Yes, sir," Don nodded quickly. "That's the way I figure it. And my first blast must have disrupted his fire control or something." The Commodore said, "He didn't get in any return fire at all?" "A few blasts, but by that time I was in too close and moving too fast. Fact of the matter is, sir, I don't think they ever recovered from my first beaming of them." "No, I suppose not," the Commodore said musingly. "It's a shame you had to burn them so badly. We've never recovered a Kraden ship in good enough shape to give our techs something to work on. It might make a basic difference in the war, particularly if there was something aboard that'd give us some indication of where they were coming from. We've been fighting this war in our backyard for a full century. It would help if we could get into their backyard for a change. It's problematical how long we'll be able to hold them off at this rate." Don Mathers said uncomfortably, "Well, it's not as bad as all that, sir. We've held them so far." His superior grunted. "We've held them this far because we've been able to keep out enough patrol ships to give us ample warning when one of their task forces comes in. Do you know how much fuel that consumes, Captain? Well, I know it's a lot. So much so that Earth's industry is switching back to petroleum and coal. Every ounce of radioactives is needed by the fleet. Even so, it's just a matter of time. Don Mathers pursed his lips. I didn't know it was that bad. The Commodore smiled sourly at him. I'm afraid I'm being a wet blanket thrown over your big bust of a celebration, Captain. Tell me, how does it feel to hold the system's highest award? Don shook his head, marveling. Fantastic, sir. Of course, like any member of the services, I've always known of the Medal of Honor, but, well, nobody ever expects to get it. He added wryly, certainly not while he's still alive and in health. Why, sir, do you realize I haven't been able to spend one unit of money since? There was an element of awe in his voice. Sir, do you realize that not even a beggar will take currency from me? The Commodore nodded in appreciation. You must understand the position you occupy, Captain. Your feat was inspiring enough, but that's not all of it. In a way, you combine a popular hero with an unknown soldier element. Awarding you the Galactic Medal of Honor makes a symbol of you. A symbol representing all the millions of unsung heroes and heroines who have died fighting for the human species. It's not a light burden to carry on your shoulders, Captain Mathers. I would imagine it a very humbling honor. Well, yes, sir, Don said. The Commodore switched his tone of voice. That brings us to the present and what your next assignment is to be. Obviously, it wouldn't do for you to continue in a scout. Big Brass seems to be in favor of using you for morale, and... Don Mathers cleared his throat and interrupted. Sir, I've decided to drop out of the space service. Drop out? The other stared at Mathers, uncomprehending. We're at war, Captain. Don nodded seriously. Yes, sir. And what you just said is true. I couldn't be used any longer as a scout. I'd wind up selling bonds and giving talks to old ladies' clubs. Well, hardly that, Captain. No, sir, I think I'd really be of more use out of the services. I'm tendering my resignation and making arrangements to help in the developing of Callisto and the other Jupiter satellites. The Commodore said nothing. His lips seemed whiter than before. Don Mathers said doggedly, Perhaps my prestige will help bring volunteers to work the new mines out there. If they see me, well, sacrificing, putting up with the hardships. The Commodore said evenly, Mr. Mathers, I doubt if you will ever have to put up with hardships again, no matter where you make your abode. However, good luck. You deserve it. Outside headquarters, Don Mathers summoned a cab and dialed his hotel. On the way over, he congratulated himself. It had gone easier than he had expected, really. Although, come to think of it, there wasn't a damn thing that the brass could do. He had to laugh to himself. Imagine if he'd walked in on the Commodore a month ago and announced that he was going to drop out of the space service. He would have been dropped all right. Right into the lap of a squadron of psycho-experts. At the hotel, he shucked his uniform, an action which gave him considerable gratification, and dressed in one of the score of civilian costumes that filled his closets to overflowing. He took pleasure in estimating what this clothing would have cost in terms of months of space service pay for a sub-lieutenant, or even a captain. Years, my boy, years. He looked at himself in the dressing room mirror with satisfaction, then turned to the auto bar and dialed himself a Stone Age-old Metaxa. He'd lost his taste for the plebeian tequila in the last few days. He held the old Greek brandy to the light and wondered pleasurably what the stuff cost per pony glass. Happily, he'd never have to find out. He tossed the drink down and, whistling, took his private elevator to the garages in the second level of the hotel's basement floors. He selected a limousine and dialed the Interplanetary Lines building. He left the car at the curb before the main entrance, ignoring all traffic regulations, and entered the building, still whistling softly and happily to himself. He grinned when a small crowd gathered outside, and smiled and clapped their hands. He grinned and waved at them. A receptionist hurried to him, and he told her he wanted to see either Mr. Deming or Mr. Rostov. And then, when she offered to escort him personally, he noticed her pixie-like cuteness and said, "What are you doing tonight, miss?" Her face went pale. "Oh, anything, sir," she said weakly. He grinned at her. "Maybe I'll take you up on that if I'm not too busy." He had never seen anyone so taken aback. She said, all flustered, "I'm Tony Fitzgerald. You can just call this building and ask for me any time." "Maybe I'll do that," he smiled. "But now, let's see old man Deming." That took her aback, too. Aside from being asked for a date, if asked could be the term, by the system's greatest celebrity, she was hearing for the first time the interplanetary tycoon being called Old Man Deming. She said, "Oh, right this way, Captain Mathers." Don said, "Mr. Mathers, now, I'm afraid, I have new duties." She looked up into his face. "You'll always be Captain Mathers to me, sir," she added softly and irrelevantly. "My two brothers were lost on the Minerva in that action last year, off Pluto." She took a deep breath, which only stressed her figure. "I've applied 6 times for space service, but they won't take me." They were in an elevator now. Don said, "That's too bad, Tony. However, the space service isn't as romantic as you might think." "Yes, sir," Tony Fitzgerald said, her soul in her eyes. "You ought to know, sir." Don was somehow irritated. He said nothing further until they reached the upper stories of the gigantic office building. He thanked her after she'd turned him over to another receptionist. Don Mather's spirits had been restored by the time he was brought to the door of Max Rostov's office. His new guide evidently hadn't even bothered to check on the man's availability before ushering Mathers into the other's presence. Max Rostov looked up from his desk, wolfishly aggressive-looking as ever. "Why, Captain," he said, "how fine to see you again. Come right in. Martha, that will be all." Martha gave the interplanetary hero one more long look, and then turned and left. As soon as the door closed behind her, Max Rostov turned and snarled, "Where have you been, you rummy?" He couldn't have shocked Don Mathers more if he'd suddenly sprouted a unicorn's horn. "We've been looking for you for a week," Rostov snapped. "Out of one bar into another, our men couldn't catch up with you. Damn it, don't you realize we've got to get going? We've got 12 documents for you to sign. We've got to get this thing underway before someone else does." Don blurted, "You can't talk to me that way." It was the other's turn to stare. Max Rostov said, low and dangerously.
No. Why can't I?
Don glared at him. Max Rostov said, low and dangerously,
Let's get this straight, Mathers. To everybody else but Deming and me, you might be the biggest hero in the solar system. But you know what you are to us?
Don felt his indignation seeping from him.
To us?
Max Rostov said flatly.
You're just another demi-buttocked incompetent on the make.
He added definitely,
And make no mistake, Mathers, you'll continue to have a good thing out of this, only so long as we can use you.
A voice from behind them said,
Let me add to that. Period. End of paragraph.
It was Lawrence Deming, who'd just entered from an inner office. He said, even his voice sounded fat,
And now that's settled, I'm going to call in some lawyers. While they're around, we conduct ourselves as though we're three equal partners. On paper, we will be.
Wait a minute now, Don blurted. What do you think you're pulling? The agreement was we split this whole thing three ways.
Deming's jowl wobbled as he nodded.
That's right. And your share of the loot is your Galactic Medal of Honor. That, and the dubious privilege of having the whole thing in your name. You'll keep your medal, and we'll keep our share.
He growled heavily.
You don't think you're getting the short end of the stick, do you?
Max Rostov said,
Let's knock this off and get the law boys in. We've got enough paperwork to keep us busy the rest of the week.
He sat down again at his desk and looked up at Don.
Then we'll all be taking off for Callisto to get things underway. With any luck, in 6 months we'll have every ounce of pitch blend left in the system sewed up.
There was a crowd awaiting his ship at the Callisto spaceport, a crowd modest by Earth standards, but representing a large percentage of the small population of Jupiter's moon.
On the way out, a staff of the system's best speechwriters and two top professional actors had been working with him. Don Mathers gave a short preliminary talk at the spaceport, and then the important one, the one that was broadcast throughout the system, that night from his suite at the hotel. He'd been well rehearsed, and they'd kept him from the bottle, except for two or three quick ones immediately before going on.
The project at hand is to extract the newly discovered deposits of pitchblende on these satellites of Jupiter.
He paused impressively before continuing.
It's a job that cannot be done in slipshod, haphazard manner. The system's need for radioactives cannot be overstressed. In short, fellow humans, we must allow nothing to stand in the way of all-out, unified effort to do this job quickly and efficiently. My associates and I have formed a corporation to manage this crash program. We invite all to participate by purchasing stock. I will not speak of profits, fellow humans, because in this emergency we all scorn them. However, as I say, you are invited to participate. Some of the preliminary mining concessions are at present in the hands of individuals or small corporations. It will be necessary that these turn over their holdings to our single, all-embracing organization for the sake of efficiency. Our experts will evaluate such holdings and recompense the owners.
Don Mathers paused again for emphasis.
This is no time for quibbling. All must come in. If there are those who put private gain before the needs of the system, then pressures must be found to be exerted against them.
We will need thousands and tens of thousands of trained workers to operate our mines, our mills, our refineries. In the past, skilled labor here on the satellites was used to double or even triple the wage rates on Earth and the settled planets and satellites. I need only repeat, this is no time for personal gain and quibbling. The corporation announces proudly that it will pay only prevailing Earth rates. We will not insult our employees by bribing them to patriotism through higher wages. There was more along the same lines. It was all taken very well, indeed, with enthusiasm. End of part 3 of Medal of Honor.